Are you ready to cheat on your wife? No, I'm not talking about that kind of cheating. I'm talking about gaining an unfair advantage on how to understand your wife better, love her deeper, avoid unnecessary arguments, and even have more sex with her. That's right. Based on the success of our Marriage Secrets for Men boot camps, we're finally sharing the Marriage Cheat Sheet for Men with the public. This is the quick reference must-have go-to guide for husbands and wannabe husbands that can help stack the odds in your favor. The Bible tells us to live with our wives in an understanding way. Well, the Marriage Cheat Sheet for Men is your shortcut to doing that. So you'll learn 4 questions you can ask your wife in every argument to avoid future arguments. You'll learn the 45 questions you can ask her to learn and master her heart. 50 ways to love your wife better. 6 things you can say to her to manage her response before you damage her emotions. 10 things you can do right now that will lead to more sex. 8 ways to get her to stop ignoring you, even 49 ways to have more meaningful conversations with your wife, and much, much more. See, this is the manual every divorced man wishes he had before he got married. Well, at least I did. And I'm so God confident that the Marriage Cheat Sheet will become one of the most valuable referred to resources in your marriage library, that if you don't think so, just send it back for a full refund. Trust me, next to our Marriage Secrets for Men Bootcamp, this will be the 2nd best investment you'll ever make in your marriage. Now, to get your copy of the Marriage Cheat Sheet for Men on sale for a limited time only, just go to realmenconnect.com and click on the store button. That's realmenconnect.com.
Welcome to Real Men Connect. Are you ready to be the extraordinary man, husband, father, and leader God called and created you to be? Then get ready to receive wisdom and guidance from some of the country's most respected men of faith as you learn everything you need to know to go from good man to great man, God's way. No judgment, no shame. Just real men with real challenges seeking real change. All for God's glory.
Hello, mighty men of God, and welcome to the Real Men Connect podcast, where we help good men become great men God's way. I'm your host, Dr. Joe Martin, and every week we interview some of the nation's most respected and accomplished men of faith to find out what it really takes to become the kind of husband, father, and spiritual leader God called and created us to be. And each interview session is packed with practical, proven biblical principles you can immediately apply in your relationships, on your job, and in your community. And today we have with us our guest is Steve Sonderman, who is the president and founder of No Regrets Men's Ministries at Elmbrook Church in Brookfield, Wisconsin. His passion is to see every local church have its own ministry to men. And in 1994, Steve began the annual No Regrets Men's Conference, which today draws thousands of men to the event held at Elmbrook Church and across the country via webcast. Steve also serves as pastor of adult discipleship at Elmbrook Church. He regularly leads seminars around the world with church leaders to help establish local men's ministries and develop leaders. And Steve has a bachelor's degree from the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee and a master's of divinity degree from Bethel Seminary. Steve and his wife, Colleen, have 4 adult children. Steve, do you have any grandchildren, man?
Yes, we have 3, and they're in Nashville.
All right, so not too far from us.
No, pretty close.
And guys, although I've never had the privilege to actually attend or speak at a No Regrets Men's Conference, that's shame on me. I've heard so much about it from other men's ministry leaders, including my late mentor, Coach Jeff Kasiah, who you guys have heard on our podcast on several occasions. So I've invited Steve on the show today to talk to us about the No Regrets Men's Conference and what it takes to mobilize men and host and plan a successful conference. So please join me in welcoming my guest, Steve Sonderman, to the show. Thanks for joining us, Steve.
Oh, Joe, it's great to be with you today and been looking forward to this for a long time.
Hey, me too. I mean, you've been in my crosshairs for a while, because when I know my mentors and people who I respect in ministry start mentioning the same name over and over again and mentioning this conference, I said, man, I got to reach out to Steve. And I know you're a really, really busy man. And so thank you for carving out some time in your schedule to be with us today, man.
No, you bet. No, I've been looking forward to it, like I said, for a long time, and I've heard about your ministry, and it's just great to talk about what God is doing in the lives of men, both here in this country and around the world. So it's a privilege for me.
Most definitely. Most definitely. And Steve, we're going to jump right into it. Every time we bring a guest on the show, we always ask them their favorite Bible verse, what gives them inspiration from the Word of God, whether it be a life verse or an anchor verse for this season in their life. Being a ministry leader like yourself, what is yours?
Well, mine has been from pretty much day one when I came to Christ back in 70, 75, and that was Philippians 1, 20, 5:21, for me to live is Christ and to die is gain. And the reason I chose that back then, and it has continued to have such a influence in my own life, is just the Apostle Paul really saying, listen, that the core of my life is Christ, and everything sort of flows from that. And I think, you know, growing up in Wisconsin, one of my heroes and a lot of people's heroes is old Vince Lombardi, the coach of the Packers. You know, and he used to say, you know, God first, family second, Packers third. And you know, I think a lot of guys, you know, develop their priority, and they have these priorities. But I think what Paul is saying is, listen, Christ is in the middle of my life, and it flows into everything that I do. And it flows into my parenting. It flows into my marriage. It flows into my work. It flows into my friendships. It flows into my hobbies. It just, it's Christ. And Christ is the middle of my life. And it flows in. Instead of trying to compartmentalize my life and saying my work's over here, my marriage is over there, and, you know, church is over here, it's just my life is Christ. And that then influences everything I think, say, and do. So that's why, not that I'm always perfect, make a lot of mistakes, and we're going to get to that later, but that's at least what I try to do, and try to base it on that verse.
I love that, Steve. You know, we were talking prior to coming on the show about you based out of Wisconsin, and I mentioned to you that I've been to Wisconsin quite a bit, lecturing a lot of colleges and universities up there back in my prior to ministry days. And there's one particular university, I won't mention the name because you would know it, that I was speaking at one of their freshman orientation that kind of reminds me of the scripture you just recited and about Christ being part of our DNA is who we are. I had been doing freshman orientations there for years. And then one year they told me I was coming back, but they told me I could not mention God from the stage. And not Christ, not Jesus, but I just couldn't even mention God. And I couldn't understand because it was about an audience, about 25 to 3,000 students. And I respectfully told them that I'm sorry that I can't do that, then I can't accept this engagement. I said, not because I don't want to honor your wishes. I said, but it is part of who I am. And if I told you I wouldn't, I'd be lying to you because it's going to come out because it's just who I am. And to their credit, they decided to let me do it anyway. And I continued to be myself. But you're right, because I was a little bit nervous because it was a pretty decent check to come there to speak. But I had to turn it down because I knew that I could not be me and express the joy that I have for the Lord. So when you said as your life verse, it makes perfect sense because it's part of who you are.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, Steve, you mentioned about growing up being a Packers fan with Vince Lombardi. Tell me a little bit about your story, man, about what it was like growing up in Wisconsin as a boy and the kind of family that you had.
Yeah. Well, I have three younger brothers, and for me, sports was my God. And so I dreamt it, slept it, played it, ate it, everything I did. I just played basketball, baseball, football. And so whatever was in season, that was my favorite sport. And not only played it, but then had the great privilege of, you know, being able to watch the Packers and Vince Lombardi and all those world championships. And then at Marquette, we had Al McGuire and just his incredible run at the collegiate level. We had the Milwaukee Braves, who won the World Series on the day I was born. And sports is such a big part of growing up for our family, for our community, and for me personally. And I was a regular church attender, went every single week, and was very involved in Sunday school and stuff like that. But sports was truly my God. And then my freshman year of high school, during baseball practice, I was making a throw down to second base, felt a twinge in my elbow, so I went to the orthopedic surgeon the next day. And he said, we're going to take some pictures of your back. And so I went, I said, my back, it's not my back. I said, I can't throw a baseball. It's my elbow. He said, well, we're taking pictures of your back. I said, well, that's what you want. And they took the pictures, the x-rays, threw them up on that white screen. And there was this huge S-curve. And I said, whose back is that? That looks terrible. He says, well, that's your back. And he says, you have a bad, severe case of scoliosis, curvature of the spine. We're going to put you in a brace to try to move your spine back. And he said, you're going to have to wear it 23 hours a day. He said, you can take it off to take a shower and you can do your exercises. I said, Doc, I said, that's going to be a problem. I said, I got baseball at 3 o'clock today. He says, no, those days are over. Well, I went home that night and I cried myself to sleep. I said, God, what in the world you're doing? I said, you say you love me and you're taking away the only thing that I love in life. And of course, he's thinking, yeah, that's the point. That's the only thing you love in life. And so that began a spiritual search for me as a freshman in high school. I got very involved in the Fellowship of Christian Athletes. And then I started attending Elmbrook Church. Stuart Briscoe was the new senior pastor here. He had come from England. And some friends started bringing me on Sunday night. And it just all sort of came together my senior year in high school when I understood the gospel for the first time. And so the guy, John Slack, who led me to the Lord, I said, John, I think I get it. I want to give my life to Jesus. And he said, you know what? I'm not sure. He said, I'm not sure you're there yet. You don't really understand commitment. He said, I want you to go home this week and I want you to read the Gospels. And I want you to read, make a list of everything that Jesus demanded of the disciples. And then we'll see if you're ready. Thought, oh, okay. So I went home and I read the Gospels and made this, got my yellow legal pad out and made my list. And then I came back to John and I said, John, I'm ready, man. This is a big commitment. This is a lifetime commitment. He said, yeah. He said, I don't think you're ready yet. I want you to read all of Paul's letters and I want you to make a list of what he demanded of the disciple, to being a disciple. I'm thinking, is this normal? I just want to pray a prayer, you know? and so I read through all of Paul's letters that week. And then I got back again. I said, John, I'm all in, all right? And that's when I came across Philippians 1:21. And then after that, John said, okay, you're ready. Let's go for this. And that was the spring of my senior year of high school. And he, that summer, just discipled me. He was drafted. He was going to be a minor league baseball player with the Oakland Athletics. But every week we got together, we took prayer walks. He taught me how to read the scriptures. We'd walk into a ice cream shop and he would say, okay, Steve, before we leave here, you're going to share the gospel with someone. And so he taught me how to share the gospel. And boy, for those next 3 months before I went off to university, he just poured his life into me and gave me a great start in the Christian life and really embedded in me just that need to disciple people and to make sure people are getting followed up and we take them deep. And that's been something that stayed with me my entire ministry. So that's how I came to Christ. And then just started to grow in Christ. And I went to college. I lived at home. I commuted down to UW-Milwaukee and thought I was going to be a teacher and a coach. I coached high school football for 6 years through college and after college and thought this is what I want to do. But it was during that time I started to get involved in high school ministry as well. And I started leading a little Bible study where I was coaching with 10 students. And 5 years later, we had over 100 students meeting every Wednesday night in a home. And the thing just exploded. And we saw a teacher's Bible study started. We did teacher prayer, student prayer meetings. And I just fell in love with ministry. And so I didn't even do my student teaching at the end of college because I knew I was going to be going on to seminary. And so then Stuart Briscoe, the senior pastor here at Elmbrook, asked me to do a one-year internship in the college age ministry after college. And so I did that, fell in love with ministry. And it sort of confirmed that this is what I want to do. And so then I went up to Bethel Seminary in the Twin Cities, did my 3 years up there. And then 35 years ago, I came back to Elmbrook. And I started in the college age ministry. I did that for about 7 years. And now for the last 28 years, I've been involved in men's ministry. And it's been just the greatest ride of my life. I met my wife. She was in the Bible study I was leading when she was a high school student. We didn't date. To show her how much I loved her, I dated her older sister. And then her older sister dumped me. And then I just moved down to the next one. Colleen was then a student at Madison, becoming a physical therapist. And we got married right after she graduated from PT school. And we've been nearly 36 years for us this November. We have 4 adult children. My oldest, Kristen, is out in Boston, and she's a trauma surgeon out there. And then Angie is in Nashville. She's the one that has our three grandkids, and she's a corporate attorney in Nashville. And Timmy is 30, and he's in Manhattan doing his PhD in aerospace engineering. And then Johnny's our youngest. He's a software engineer here in the Milwaukee area. So four great kids, and they all checked in yesterday for Father's Day, and we were able to talk a little bit and catch up. And so we have great cities to visit. Kelly and I spend a lot of time just going and seeing them. It's easier for us to go to them than for them to come to us. So, yeah, parenting's a joy. And, again, with the three grandkids, we love heading down to Nashville more than anywhere just to spend time with them. So that's a little bit of my story.
Well, and that is great, Steve. Thanks for sharing that with us. And I'm hoping whenever you come down to Nashville, you can look me up and hopefully we'll be able to connect. My wife and I love to travel to Nashville. It's only about maybe 2 hours away from here.
Right. It's a great city.
Now, Steve, you shared a lot in your story, man, about how you took those steps towards ministry. But I didn't hear your parents mentioned in there.
Yeah.
And so I want to know, what kind of influence did your parents have on you before you met this great man of God who kind of discipled you and took you under his wing?
Yeah, that's a great point. I appreciate you bringing that up, Joe, because they had a huge influence on me. Mom and Dad lived in Milwaukee, and they moved out to Brookfield, which is a suburb. It's probably, you know, a 15-minute drive just due west from Milwaukee. And they moved out to Brookfield to help plant a church. It was a Lutheran church, and they helped plant it. It was just a small church, 25, 50 people. But that their whole reason they moved out was to plant that church. And my dad worked in the city, a large company, Allen Bradley, now Rockwell, and he did that for 40 years of his life. But both my mom and dad, and my mom was a teacher, gave us a great example of serving in the local church. And that was modeled for all four of us kids from day one, just whether it was doing cleanup around the place or my dad teaching Sunday school, confirmation class, chairman of the board. My mom was on the board, involved in every area of ministry. My dad, when the pastor's on vacation, would go and do visitation. He would preach. So for me and my brothers, man, we saw that when you follow Christ, it means service. And so that was a huge, huge legacy that they left with each one of us kids. My father also was a very humble man. And had done very well in work and was, you know, very well liked and had a lot of friends. And yet, man, I don't know a more humble man than my father. And so he taught us humility as well. And then the final thing was just integrity. I just saw my father in business deals, interactions with friends and family, neighbors, coworkers, just this integrity that just stood out. And so when I had a chance to be with my dad yesterday, was able just to thank him for each one of those qualities that he demonstrated and the path that him and mom put us on towards following Christ. All my brothers follow Christ. They're all serving in various capacities, and so very, very grateful for them and what they did in our lives.
You know, Steve, let me ask you a question. This is kind of cyber, because we're going to get into No Regrets Men's Conference and what it takes to bring men together and that kind of thing. But you mentioned having a great family. And one thing that fascinates me about doing this show and working with men's ministry leaders like yourself is that how we can come from totally different backgrounds and still end up in the same place, which shows that God has a plan for each of our lives. Because I didn't have that kind of foundation growing up as a kid in the projects in Miami. But you had your dad and your mom, they were church planters, and your dad seems to be a great mighty man of God. But you went through that time with your shoulder, with your arm, and found that your back was messed up and everything. And this guy, John Slatt, comes into your life and he helps disciple you. I guess the question I'm trying to ask is that as men of God and we trying to be the best fathers we can, how come it takes sometimes outside influence to come in to get our kids to go to the next level? Because it seems like your dad could have helped you get there.
Right. Yeah, it is so interesting, and it's so common that I see this happen in men's lives, and even in my own kids' lives, have seen it happen where, you know, you're there day in and day out for 18 years,
yeah,
pouring in, you know, praying with, reading to, modeling before them, and then this guy or this woman steps into their life on a college campus or in the workplace, and all of a sudden your kid comes home, oh man, this Christianity, this is the greatest thing in the world. And I'm like, yeah we talked about that, but, you know, and but I think it's or it's maybe the Sunday school teacher or, you know, whoever that God brings into their life that just, and I just think it's sometimes it's just this idea that they see it in us. It's sort of like become sort of old hat because it's just that's what you're supposed to be and who you're supposed to be as a dad or a mom or a, you know, a grandparent or whatever. And then how God just will take something different, something a little bit different perspective, maybe fresh, different language, new way. And it just clicks. And that's the beauty of the body of Christ. That's the beauty of the gospel, that God's going to work in every person's life in a different way. And there is no one way. And that the gospel hits people in different ways. The gospel is the gospel, but boy, for some it's that sense of belonging. For some it's that message of forgiveness. For some it's the, you know, the redemption piece. For others it's the reconciliation piece. For, you know, it just shows itself in different ways, and that's the beauty of it. And I think as a parent, I'm reminding dads all the time that, you know, our job is just to be faithful with what God has given us and do what you can do. And there are no guarantees, right? You know, there are, and some of your kids are going to continue to follow Jesus and some aren't. And you can be the greatest people in the world and do everything you're supposed to do. There is no guarantee because children are God's given them that ability to make their own decisions. And when they see everything, now hopefully you continue to pray for them and good things happen, but there are no guarantees. And but you just try to set dads up and moms as well, just to do those right things and try to set the foundation and the table for God to work.
You know, because in the long run, we're happy and thankful, and I'm sure your dad is too, that you were able to catch that fire. And my wife always says that we're the sowers, God's the grower. You know, we have to continue to sow the seeds. And your dad and your mom, they laid a foundation that John was able to come along and say, well, thank God for his parents, because this is making it a lot easier than it would be
exactly
otherwise.
Exactly. And I think sometimes we can look down maybe at the denomination we grew up in or, you know, something like that. But boy, some seeds were being planted. Right. And I just look back that all those seeds were being planted and John just happened to be there at the right time in the right place to make it all just boom. It all just came together. And so, yeah, God uses everyone that way.
And thank God for a guy like John Slack. You know, now let's get into to the men's conference and just bring men together, because anyone out there who's a men's ministry leader knows that getting men to come together, especially on a consistent basis, is like herding cats. So why do you think you guys, Steve, have been so successful at doing it for such a long period of time?
Well, I know there's no silver bullet on this, but I can give you a quick history and then I can give you just some things we've learned over the years. This is when I started in men's back in 92, 93 is when I actually started men's. Then we started the conference later. You know, there weren't hardly any men's ministry pastors. I was one of the first men's ministry pastors in the country. I tried to find another one and I couldn't. There were men's ministries going on, like Promise Keepers had just started. It was, you know, just a year maybe in. And there was CBMC was happening, and there were different Camps Crusade had a special marketplace ministry. Navigators had a marketplace ministry, and there were different things like that going on, and there were individuals. Priority One was happening out on the East Coast, and you know, there were different things going on, but just no men's ministries very little in churches, men's breakfasts, and maybe a few small groups. But it was hard for me. I just researched and I looked and I traveled trying to find who's doing ministry to men these days. And there was just so little. And so the first thing I did is I said, I've got to develop some leaders because I'm not going to be able to do this by myself. And so I started two groups, one on Tuesday morning, one on Wednesday morning, and I approached 24 guys. I said, listen, guys, I said, will you meet with me 12 on Tuesday, 12 on Wednesday, and I'm going to take you deep. We're going to have 2 hours of homework every week, and we're going to meet for class 2 hours every week. So I said, this isn't for the faint of heart. This isn't for the new believer. I said, I want to develop some leaders. And I got 24 guys to say yes, and it took a while to find them. And so we met that first week. I wrote the at that time it was called Top Gun, basic training. I wrote the material Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. My assistant typed it up on Friday. We ran it off on Monday, and then I did it on Tuesday. And for 36 weeks, that was my life of just developing that curriculum, that discipleship material. And I took the guys through it, and we just covered the basics, just walking with Jesus. We talked about servant leadership. We talked about marriage. We talked about parenting. We talked about faith and work. And we talked about discovering your purpose and serving and evangelism. And it was just great stuff. The guys ate it up. And I got to the end of the 9-month process, and I asked the guys, I said, what do you think? And 16 out of the 24 guys said, I want to lead a group next year. 24 for 24, Rand. They said, this is the best thing ever. We've been going to church our whole life. We know all this stuff, but it's never become real. We've never applied it. We've never taken these type of steps. And the wives were just the biggest cheerleaders in the world. And so I knew we couldn't start 16 new groups the next year. So I put them as co-leaders, best decision we ever made. So we started 8 groups the next year, and we had 8 groups of 12. And then the next year we had 12 groups of 12, then 14, then 16. And so this thing just multiplied here at Elmbrook with literally, well, now we've had a couple thousand guys go through this basic discipleship 9-month process of equipping a man to be a leader in their home, church, workplace, and world. And so after that first year, we had some excitement generated, and there was going to be a PK conference out in Denver in Boulder. And so we all got on a bus and we went out there and had a great experience. And matter of fact, one of my favorite experiences, we're in line for dinner. I gave them Top Gun hats as a graduation present for getting through this 9-month experience. And one of this elderly gentleman comes up to us and he goes, hey, were you stationed at Miramar? And I go, no, I said, for Top Gun, and we did this program at our church, and, you know, it was sort of based on the movie, taking the best of the best and taking them deep and equipping them to really go into the world and make a difference and, you know, fight the battle for Jesus, you know, the whole 9 yards. And the guy goes, oh, that sounds great. I said, how about you? He goes, yeah, I founded Top Gun, the real Top Gun. So we had the most incredible experience listening to this guy in line for the next hour as he told us about the real Top Gun, you know. And so we stayed in touch for a little bit until he passed away. But we came back from PK and said, you know what? We need something in midwinter. February in Wisconsin is nasty. I mean, it's below zero. It's 2-3 feet of snow. And we just need, it's a slow month. You know, you get past the new year and all the celebrations. It's just, there's not a lot to do. I mean, you can go ice fishing, go watch the Bucks, or head down the spring training. But it's just, there's not a lot to do in February in Wisconsin. So we said, let's do a conference opposite of the summer PK conference. So I went out and I called it the Dream Team. I found 12 guys. We got together and we said this, let's become friends and change the world. So I said, this ministry is going to flow from friendship, and anything that happens is going to flow out of the friendship we have with one another. And so we thought, let's just do it on a Friday night. I asked Joseph Stoll. He was then the president down at Moody, and then Stuart Briscoe to be our two main speakers. We pulled together a worship team, and we just started telling people about it. We had no idea who was going to come. We had no idea. Are we going to get 100 people? Because we didn't even do advance tickets. We just said, just show up, and it's $5. You know, just throw it in as you come, you know. And We had just moved into our new sanctuary, which holds about 3,300, and we filled that, and we filled our chapel overflow of 1,000 with 1,000 guys, and we were absolutely blown away. It was sort of like, if you build it, they will come. And and so it was a great Friday night, and we thought, oh, this, maybe we should do this again. We didn't even think it. We thought this was a one-time event just for the guys of Elmbrook. And that's all we were thinking. And everyone said, oh, Steve, you got to do this again. I go, oh, my goodness, that was so much work. And so we said, okay, let's move it to Saturday. We'll have two keynotes, morning and afternoon, and we'll do a bunch of seminars in between. And best decision we ever made. We did have a drop-off that next year and in attendance, because now it was a whole day deal, you know. But that has been really the format that we've used ever since. And really from that point on, it's just been this slow, slow, gradual climb. And to the point where this year, you know, we sell out Elmbrook, our place here, in usually about 11 to 20 minutes. It gets sold out, the 3,000 tickets. And then we had 120 host sites around the country. This was, I think, our 11th or 12th year of streaming it. We started with 3 the first year, went from 3 to 9 to 15 to 25, and just a slow, gradual increase over the years. We don't spend any money in marketing, publicity. It's purely word of mouth. It's I would say 95% volunteer driven. And this team of men that's led by a volunteer just does this entire conference. And it's just, for me, one of the greatest joys to see all these men finding their place of service and something they love to do and truly having incredible relationship with one another and the ministry just flowing out of that. And so, yeah, it's been a great ride, just to see it grow in other churches. And then the big thing I do is I spend the majority of my time is training churches, training denominations, and how do you minister to men? How do you reach men in the community? How do you grow them up? How do you disciple them? That old Top Gun material, we did that for a bunch of years. And then we changed the name to No Regrets Study Series because we figured, let's just have it both be called the same thing, you know? And so, so now we have the No Regret Study Series. It's become a 2-year discipleship course, and that's really our bread and butter. The conference is great. It's a catalytic event. My goal is to move men from that event into a small group setting, because we know the optimal place for spiritual growth is a small group. So everything we do with churches is to help them move from just a one-day event to a ministry to men the other 364 days of the year, and moving them men to that. So we always have a follow-up Bible study that the guys can download at the conference and take and get started, because we know they're not going to be able to go from 0 to 100, that there has to be some, you know, you got to start them slow, 4-week study, no homework, you just show up, you know, and you build the bridges from 4 weeks to 6 weeks to 12 weeks to 9 months. You know, you just do that slowly over time. You grow their commitment and you help them to grow in maturity over time. And, so anyways, I mean, that's a lot, but that's sort of the story of how we got started and what God's done over these years.
And Steve, what I can tell you is that that's an understatement. You say that's a lot, because there's like a million things I can ask you about that. And I'm trying to figure what would be the most efficient way now to ask you some follow up questions, which I'm just leaning on the Holy Spirit to help me do that, because there's a lot of great things that you mentioned that I have a lot of questions about in a very short period of time to ask them, but I'll do the best that I can. And I'll start with a simple question is, do you think the success, we know that obviously God's hand was on that. Was it more to do with the timing of it, that the men were hungry at that time when you guys launched that, to have that kind of success coming out of the box? Because that's unheard of in men's ministry. Do you think it was the timing, or do you think there was something else that you guys discovered later that was the impetus behind the success of that kickoff?
This is completely and totally a God thing. Mm-hmm. It is. There was the at that time in the early 90s. There was the whole beginning of PK, and PK was the impetus for so many different men's ministries to start up. I think when we did the research, when we all got together and we talked as ministry leaders, we're thinking maybe about 60 to 80 men's ministries started around the country and world because of PK and what they started. And so it was part of that whole revival that was taking place in the lives of men that PK was really an impetus to start. We had had Coach Mack here, one of my good friends, John Anderson, linebacker for the Packers for 15 years. His linebacker coach at Michigan was Mack. And so John was able to get Coach Mack to come here to Elmbrook and did a men's event for us. And that just generated a great deal of excitement and energy before we even did the first No Regrets Conference. And so it was definitely God's timing. I think it was church-based. It was the timing of what was going on in the culture at the time. I think part of it was that our pastor, Stuart Briscoe, was a man's man. He was in the Marines in England, and he was a marketplace. He was a banker before he became a pastor. He understood men's language. He understood men. Men loved listening to him. So where there's some churches, there's hardly any men involved. Elmbrook had a lot of men involved, and sort of they just needed something to get to light that spark. You know what I'm saying? It was like everything was in place, and all I did was light the match. And so anyone could have done it, but it was God's deal all the way.
Because what I'm hearing, Steve, is that that it was God's hand on this, but the timing was actually perfect. You're looking at a lot of things because we know what it takes to make these things happen, and a lot of things had to fall into place. You had a leader who was totally of the church, who's totally behind it, which really helps. And also, you had a core group of guys who were saying, we're all in to help plan this thing. That was important. I see as an important element part of it. Also, you guys are not part of a small church. You guys consider Elmbrook is considered, quote, a mega church. So you have at least, because like when you're saying finding those initial 12 to get two groups of 12. Now, because that is great, but you said something. I'm glad you said. He said that wasn't easy.
No, right.
So the thing, and I would think, wouldn't it have been easier because you had a big church? But you're saying you still had to fight against the nature of man to be able to pull that off to get those two groups of 12. But I want to ask you this. I had mentioned earlier when I was introducing you that I've attended and spoken at many men's conferences before all across the country. Some better than others, I'll admit, but not yours. So what do you think makes the No Regrets Men's Conference different from most men's conferences? We're not throwing any under the bus, but what do you think? You guys have been doing this for a long time. What makes you guys different from the other conferences out there?
I get the opportunity to speak at a lot of retreats and men's conferences all over the country, and most of my time is actually spent overseas. There's so much going on in this country, so I just I'm overseas a lot of the year, just helping there. But what I think, there's a couple things. I think it's done very well. These are all marketplace Christians that in their jobs as salespeople, as lawyers, as doctors, I have all different types on the committee. They do things well. They have to do things well in the marketplace, and they bring that to the church. And they said, if we're going to do a conference, then we are going to do it well. It's not going to be sloppy. It's not going to be shabby, but everything we do, we're going to, stick to our time. It's going to be run to the second. We're going to do very good worship. Our slides and PowerPoints and videos are going to be done. I have a guy that volunteers. He's made our videos for the whole time, all of our testimony videos, all our intro videos, and he's won national awards for videography, and he brings and gives us that gift of writing these stories and developing them. And Julius does just a fabulous job with these things. But and then the seminars, I would say, here's what we've learned from 26 years of comment cards is that the reason the guys come to the conference is for the seminars. The general sessions, the speaker may hit where you're at or not, because they're doing more of a general talk. In the seminars, I get what I need for that day. I'm having an issue with my teenage daughter, and so we have a seminar on parenting daughters or parenting teenage sons. Or I'm a new dad, we have a seminar for that, on finances, on dealing with a difficult boss, helping you in times of transition at work. dealing with anger, whatever it is, whatever you're dealing with, we know what those bigger categories are. And so we make sure that in our seminar options that we're hitting the four or five big issues with specific topics under them. And guys tell us all the time they appreciate the fact that they get what they came for in the seminar. So that's one thing that's really, really been helpful. Matter of fact, we offer four seminars during the course of the day, four different options, four time slots. And we had so much pushback. They said, Steve, could you guys do an early bird at 7 o'clock in the morning? So we do an early bird seminar, and we'll have 12 to 1500 guys taking buses from all over Wisconsin to come for those early bird seminars. So they get their fifth seminar in, they grab their lunch, which should be a seminar, and they go to a seminar with their lunch as well. So the seminars have been really, really, really big. I think the timing, the season of when you do it is important, that you choose the right time in your season, your ministry calendar, and you look at what's going on in sports, what's going on with kids, what's going on with church, and you pick that time that is good for you as well.
Well, as a rule of thumb, though, Steve, when is the best time? Like you said, every church is going to be different depending on what's going on at their church or in their city. But typically, what opening are you looking for to say, this is when we should do?
Well, I think you have to say, okay, you know that you're going to have all your church kickoff stuff and school kickoff stuff in the fall, right? So September, October is pretty tough. Then you have November. You have a little window there pre-Thanksgiving. Now you might have your missions conference or your women's retreat or whatever. So you have to be careful on that. December is pretty much a wash because of all your Christmas stuff. And I'll be that thing. So then you're looking at after New Year's. And I think that's your January, February, March is normally a good time and for a lot of these conferences. I know that Brian with Iron Sharpened Iron, they do some in the fall, but I know a lot of theirs that they do are sort of in that time frame as well. And that seems to be a good time, because then if you get too late into the spring, there's just too many end of the year stuff with school and, you know, outdoor sports on Saturday and things like that. So that's just a little window in there. Man, the other thing
go ahead, Steve. What were you going to say?
Well, I was just going to say, you know, I know you can just say this, but prayer is really important to us. When I first started in men's, I went to my first men's breakfast, and I went to it. It was a January Saturday morning, the same 40 guys have been meeting for the last 80 years. And I did my talk, and then I did the benediction. I said, you guys just attended a funeral. I said, this is the last men's breakfast. I said, we're not going to do a men's breakfast until we know why we're doing this. And so I stopped it. And so the guy that ran it came into my office on Monday morning. He said, Steve, what are you doing? This is the only thing we have going in the men's ministry right now is the men's breakfast. You're the new men's pastor, and you just canceled the only thing we're doing. He said, what are you going to do? I said, Dwayne, I have no idea. But I said, here's what I'll tell you. I said, you find me 24 men who will pray and fast every Wednesday noon, then we'll start talking. I figured that was going to buy me months. He's not going to find 24 guys to do that. Next Monday, he walks into my office, throws down a piece of paper and says, here's your list. And that list grew to over 100 guys. And so we called it the Frontlines Prayer Ministry. And to this day, we have men that are stopping to pray all over Milwaukee. Now, we let them do it whatever day they want, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. But they close their door in their office on Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday or whatever, and they pray and they fast for the men of this church and the men of this city. And that Frontlines Prayer Ministry has been the foundation of everything that we have done. And we have prayer on the conference, and guys in a steady stream are going into that prayer room, and we have a whole team of men that are just praying for them and their wounds and their hurts and their addictions, and as God speaks to them and challenges them or they need comfort, whatever it is. But that prayer is not just on one day, it's year round that we're praying for the men. And so if someone's thinking of, you know what, I want to start a conference, then start today with prayer and start by building that prayer team, because that will be the foundation of everything you do.
You know, Steve, that is so powerful and so important to our success in men's ministry. You know, right now I'm thinking there's got to be a guy there. And Steve, I'm just going to be straight up and honest with you. There's probably two guys out there listening right now. One is excited about what you're talking about and say, man, that is awesome. This is the potential. And I'm going to be honest with you. There got to be a guy out there who's mad at you right now and frustrated, not mad at you personally, but thinking, I've never experienced that type of success at my church or in my men's group, in my men's ministry. And it seems to be happening so easy for you. So easy for you. So let's make it real, because I know as much as God has had his hand on this conference and what you guys are doing at Elmbrook, it hasn't been smooth sailing all the time. So what has been your biggest challenge in planning the No Regrets Men's Conference and working with men in general?
I'd say one of the challenges is also the blessing. I have the greatest team in the world, and there's nothing better than working with these guys in this team of volunteers. But it's also the greatest challenge, because these guys are working 40, 50, 60 hours a week. And sometimes they just look at me and they go, Steve, I just can't do anything more. I wish I could, but I've got a family, I've got a job. And so the challenge is constantly trying to take it's the old 80-20 thing, that a small group are doing everything. And the challenge is constantly trying to get more and more men involved out of the pew and into the game. And so the challenge is, how do we mobilize more and more men to ease the burden of this small group of men that are doing so much? And so we're constantly looking, and I'm constantly praying and asking men to join us in the work. So it's that everyone has a chance to be a part of it. I think another great challenge is just men's schedules today, is that there's just the busyness of home, of work, of being asked to coach this and be here and do that, of travel and things like that. Guys are finding it harder and harder to give even an hour for a small group. And that's a huge challenge for us to just continue to reach younger men and to help them take those steps of getting grounded and getting connected in a small group.
You know, Steve, I think I may have time to squeeze in two more questions where we go into the man up questions. And I'm trying to get the most bang for my buck to help guys out, because I do want to see men, just like you do, want to see men succeed, where they are within their communities, in their churches, in their workplace, of mobilizing men and bringing them together. But I'll ask an easy question, and then I'll get to a more serious question. What's been the biggest surprise for you in being part of this men's movement that you guys are part of with No Regrets and at your church at Elmbrook? What has been one of the biggest surprises for you?
I think one of the biggest surprises is just to see the hunger, the desire, the energy, the excitement at the conference, where we have guys from all walks of life coming together, all backgrounds, denominations, races, nationalities, coming together, ages, and just seeing them worshiping God together. There is something so powerful when men get together and worship. They are not inhibited by their children or by women, or by whatever, but the fervor for which they worship, and it's truly just blowing the roof off the church, is just one of the most surprising things to me, one of the most joyful things to me. There is not a dry eye in the place when 3,000 men begin to worship. The other big surprise has been by the number of churches that want to be a part of this. That has absolutely blown me away, that churches actually want to take this stream and they want to be a part of what God is doing. And that just is a complete surprise to me, that another church would want this. And just to see the expansion so fast around the country, again, all based on volunteers, has been pretty cool.
I tell you, not only is it probably surprising, but it's got to be humbling at the same time to see that. You know, and so I'm going to end with this other question, before we get into man up questions. What do you think are some of the biggest mistakes that we make as ministry leaders, men's ministry leaders particularly, in planning a men's conference? Some of the things that we need to avoid doing that you see, just because I'm sure you've had a lot of churches come to you, ask you for help and support. So what do you tell them to avoid?
Yeah, I think easy number. The number one's real easy. The number one is one guy trying to do it all. Constantly hear that one. Well, I'm doing this. I'm doing this. I want to do this. And I tell churches all the time, do not even think about doing a ministry to men in your church or a conference or any event for that matter, men's retreat, whatever, without having a team. No team, no conference. Until you have a group of four, five, six, seven guys around that table, they're going to carry it. One guy doing registration, one guy doing programming, one guy doing publicity, one guy doing registration. And we have it all laid out on our site, all the different job descriptions, all the different roles, all the things that have to get done, the year timeline. I mean, we have that all on there. But I just, that is number one, one guy trying to do it himself. So you have to have a point person. That's maybe the first thing. Have a point person that's going to be in charge, that has the vision, has the passion, has the gift mix to do it. Number two, they have to have a team that will do it with him. And so no point person, no conference, no team, no conference. Number three, you have to have a purpose. What is the purpose of your conference? Is it evangelistic? Is it equipping the believers? Is it developing leaders? What is the purpose? So many conferences or retreats, if I'm going to go and speak, I ask them, what is the purpose of this retreat, of this gathering? So that you're very clear on that, and then you plan accordingly. And then number four, show me your plan for 9 months out. I want to see your plan month by month, what you're going to do to get to here. And oftentimes it's thrown together last second and they haven't really given it the thought. You know, one of the things that we did, which was key to this whole thing, is that we had point people in churches all over Wisconsin, 500 point people. And the point person was a guy that would say, okay, we're going to get guys from our church to the conference. So what churches are you working with? Have you found the point people? You can't just send a publicity packet to the church and think it's going to get publicized. You have to have a point person that says, I will talk to my guys. I will hand out the flyers. I'll get it in the bulletin. I will, you know, do the whole thing, and making sure that you have those point people, whether it's five churches, 10 churches, or 500 churches. But that point person in those other churches to truly make it a citywide conference is really, really key. The other thing related to that, as far as seminars, we invite pastors from other churches to lead the seminars, because if the pastor comes, he's going to bring his men with him. And so that's been really key for us as well.
Oh, that is great. I'm glad I asked you that question, because that's a great way to get some good ideas. I love the no team, no conference. That'll stop a lot of guys in their tracks right there.
Right, exactly.
I love it. I love it.
It is. Oh,
this is great information, Steve. So it's that time I was telling you about before we came on the air. It's our infamous Man Up questions. And Steve, all they are five quick questions starting with the letters M-A-N-U-P. And all they require is your fearless honesty and authenticity, which you won't have a problem with whatsoever. So the question is, are you ready, Steve?
Well, I have a question for you.
Sure.
Are these about ministry or me personally?
Oh, I don't know yet. I'll kind of let the Spirit lead me when I start asking.
Okay. Okay. Well, then I can go either way. I just want to make sure
I do what you want. That's what I do. I kind of let the Spirit lead me in that. And guys, so the question is, are you ready, Steve?
I'm ready.
All right. And guys, we'll be right back with my guest, Steve Sonderman, after this short break.
Hey, Mighty Warrior, you know the great John Wesley once said that if you give him 300 men who fear nothing but God, hate nothing but sin, and are determined to know nothing but Jesus Christ crucified, he said he would set the world on fire. Do you know that one quote changed my life? Because after hearing it, God immediately gave me a vision to build a team of 300 men who would change the world for Christ. But I didn't realize it at the time, that a man is the hardest thing to reach. And if you don't believe me, just ask any pastor or men's ministry leader or even a wife. Now, due to the success of our Real Men Connect podcast, we've managed to reach and teach men all over the world in 43 countries and still counting. But John Wesley knew when he spoke those famous words, just like Jesus did, that there's a huge difference between attracting a passive crowd of men and recruiting a committed team of men. So we decided to launch the Real Men 300. The Real Men 300 is an opportunity for you to join an exclusive team of men who've agreed to financially partner with Real Men Connect to be personally mentored, supported, and coached so they can be professionally trained and equipped to mentor, support, and disciple the next generation of men for Christ. So we want to personally help you grow in Christ while you're supporting us in ministry. We're a nonprofit organization and we rely heavily on your financial support. So we're asking you to consider partnering with us by giving at least $30 a month, that's only $1 a day, to help us help you be the man God called and created you to be. To give or to find out more, just go to realmen300.com. That's realmen300.com and join the 300 today.
Welcome back, Mighty Men of God. I'm with my guest, Steve Sonderman, who's the founder and president of No Regrets Men's Ministries at Elmbrook Church in Brookfield, Wisconsin. And he's been blessing us by sharing some great ideas, some do's and don'ts and tips and success of his conference. But now he's decided to get on the what we call the love seat. And we're gonna ask some questions, ask him the man of questions. And Steve, you said you're ready for it. We're going to start with the M. I asked you about the mistakes that we need to avoid launching a conference and planning a conference, and you gave us some great tips and ideas on that. But I'm going to ask you personally, as a man, what was the biggest mistake you've learned in leading a men's conference, or the biggest mistake that you made that you learned from in leading a men's conference when you started out? Because it seemed like you had a lot of success, but I'm sure there was some struggles along the way.
Yeah, I think I would say the biggest mistake that I made personally was that my self-worth was based on what I did. And as a result of that, that led me to becoming a workaholic. And so I truly had an addiction. And so about 7 years into it, I had to get some outside help to really deal with my addiction. And it took me a number of years of counseling and help to break through that addiction and not be a workaholic. Now, in the end, God used that, obviously, to be able to talk to men about addiction. And because in some ways, really, as you know, addiction's addiction. I mean, whether it's sexual or alcoholic or work or whatever, the addiction is just the symptom of what you see. There's always something underneath it, and that's what you have to deal with. And that's what I had to do. I had to deal with that. So that was my big mistake, is that I allowed work to consume me, the ministry, pastorate, leading the conference, and I had to deal with that to become a better man.
You know, Steve, I think a lot of the men out there, including myself, can relate to that. When you get so consumed with doing God's work that you forget that God doesn't need you to do it. You're just coming alongside of him, co-laboring with him to do it. It's a privilege to be able to do it. So I'm glad that you shared that. Now, the A stands for attitude. And you guys have been doing this conference long enough now that you've seen thousands of men go through it. If you could change one attitude in men, I mean, just we're speaking generally now with the men that you've seen as they come through the conference, obviously they're being blessed by it. But if you could change one attitude in men, what would it be?
That I can do this by myself. Isolation, individualism, the attitude that I don't need other men, that I can figure this out, that whole mentality. And that the thing I preach over and over and over again, that Christianity is not a solo sport. Christianity is a team sport, and we need one another. And so our theme verse for the ministry has always been, you know, as iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. And so everything we do is to get men connected together, because together truly is better than alone. And so that attitude is, I don't need other men, is just killing men everywhere. It's not a U.S. problem. It's a world problem.
You know what, Steve? What fascinates me about being in men's ministry is that, you know, we are now episode over 350 episodes of our podcast. And I interview all these guests and I ask them man up questions and I ask for their advice. And you always hear them say, you can't do this by yourself. You can't do this by yourself. You need help. This is a team sport. We got to be in brotherhood. And so I'm sure men are hearing this to nauseam, but why do we still, after hearing it a million times, decide we still think we can handle it by ourselves? Now, I know this is not part of the man-up question, but I'm just curious about that. How can we still hear this so much? Probably more than we hear our name. And yet we still keep thinking we can do this by ourselves. Why do you think men still insist on doing it by themselves?
Oh, I think it's part of our masculine DNA. I think, you know, you go back to Genesis, and in Genesis 2, you know, God says it's not good for man to be alone. And I think he saw something right there, that men would have that tendency to be alone. and to do life alone. And then when you have in Genesis 3, you have the fall and you have man going and hiding. And man has been hiding behind sports and their Rolex and their business and their work and their family ever since. And I think it's just part of the fall, part of our sinful nature is to just be alone. I mean, there's other parts of it too, but that's, I think, one part of it. And so I think we're fighting that. And then I think in society, even as a little boy from on up, we're just taught that we need to do this by ourselves and we need to, you know, make life work and we need to pull ourselves up by the bootstraps. And all those messages that we hear young on. Just a few reasons.
You know, and I keep, you know, when you said we need to get volunteers and men to be part of this, I think that's one reason I like men being involved with helping and coordinating conferences and whatever we're putting together for men, because they get to see a side of men that they normally don't see, because typically they're in their own world. But then they say, wait a minute, this is how men are. We're like this. And I think they're surprised to see how serious this problem is of men doing life as Lone Rangers, you know. But now let me ask you this. Now, the N stands for next. And obviously, you guys have had a lot of success for a lot of years with this conference. But what would be the next big thing you would attempt to do for God if you knew you couldn't fail?
Yeah, and that's real easy. We've been thinking about that. I've been thinking about that personally for a long time now. And the next big thing is to truly launch a movement of discipleship around the world. That's what I want to do. That's what I want to give my life to, is to continue to develop international partners and help churches both in this country launch that movement, is to really catch that vision for discipleship and in working with small group leaders who want to multiply themselves. You know, a movement is characterizes is that when it's four people removed from you, and that's what I want to see. That's what we want to see happen, is launching this movement, is finding those men of peace, finding those, as Blackaby said, you look for where God's going, working, and you join them, right? And that's what we want to do. Is that I was just in Brazil 2 weeks ago, going to Peru, going to India. I got so many trips this year, next year, and I just want to work with denominational leaders, church leaders, just individual men, whoever it is that just has a passion for reaching men. I want to pour gas on them. I want to empower them. I want to help them catch a vision for what it means to take men deep and to truly become a leader in their home church, workplace, and world. And that's the next big thing for me. That's the next challenge, is how can I be a part of what God is doing around the world and to launch that movement of discipleship. So we're making disciples who make disciples who make disciples who make disciples. And, that's what gets me up in the morning. That's what keeps me up at night. That's what stirs my blood, is thinking through how do we do that and how can we be a part of that. The conference is one part of that, but the conference is purely a catalytic event, and so it's got to be so much more than that. And so really, really excited about that part of it.
You know, and that's, you know, anybody who's been in this long enough, they know that's the same heart they have. We all have that heart. Like when you're saying that is like just bringing goosebumps to me, because every man that I run into who's doing this and committed their lives to this, that's the end goal. And I know a lot of men who are just active or part of men's ministries, they don't get it. They don't understand. They think, wow, I'm being a better husband. I'm being a better father. That's great. Oh, yeah, that's fine. But if we're not multiplying, we're dying. That's what I say. And so, but we're in this because of the multiplication and the replication of this, because that's what Jesus told us to do. His words was go make disciples of all the nations. And it seems you're doing that internationally. And so I'm in agreement with you, and I'm praying for you, Steve, and your ministry, that you guys will continue to do that. And any way I can be part of that, I would love to help out, because that's why we got into this, to see men multiplied, not just added to, you know. So I got a couple of more questions for you and we'll be out of here. The U stands for understand. And now with years behind you, when you look back when you were younger, what was the one thing you didn't understand about being a man, but you understand better now?
Okay. Couple things. I didn't understand the power of passivity and my tendency towards that as a dad and a husband. And I had no problems at work because, as I mentioned, I was a workaholic. That was a problem area for me. But I didn't realize how passive I was with my wife, Colleen, and my four children. And the area I'm really trying to grow in is to be more intentional in serving and loving Colleen, being available to Colleen, being emotionally connected to Colleen, and then the same for my kids. Now, my kids are all gone, but it's still, there's that intentionality of calling them, texting them, talking to them, and seeking to have an emotional connection with them. And now with the grandkids, it's like God gives you a second chance with the grandkids, you know? And so that too. And so that's why we try to get down to Nashville as much as we can. But I think that's one thing I understand much better is just the power of passivity in my own life and having to battle that and fight that it won't just naturally go away. But I have to be very intentional about it.
Yeah, most definitely. Most definitely. Now, I'm thinking with the last question and that may, you might even say this the same answer, but if you have a different one, let me know. The P stands for problem. And as a mighty man of God, Steve, what one problem in your life do you still struggle with as a man, even today?
Yeah, I think many, but for sake of time, it's what we talked about earlier, and that is independence, is that I have a lot of good friends. I have my men's group that I get together with on Tuesday mornings. I have other guys in my life that I'm very connected with, but it's that independence from God where I can just get up in the morning, get my to-do list and say, okay, I'm going to start working for Jesus and not being connected with the vine as much as I should. And so I struggle with prayer. I mean, I pray, but I want to pray more. I read the word, but I want to be in the word more. I want to be a man whose words and attitudes and life is flowing from intimacy with Jesus and walking with Jesus, and that I'm living the Jesus life and not the Steve life. And so that for me is just that I think it's part of the male thing as well. I'm not going to make excuses, but I think I that's for me the one thing I got to keep on working at, front and center.
You know, and I'm glad you brought it up because I think a lot of us can relate to that. I can relate to that. And what a great desire. God says that if we delight in him, he will give us desires of our heart. And we keep thinking that's anything that we ask for. No, it's what lines up with his desires. And he has that desire for you to live the Christ life, not the Steve life. And so what a wonderful, wonderful desire, man. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that with us. And thank you for being so vulnerable. You survived it, Steve. You survived the man up questions, man.
Yeah. Oh, that was great. I love it. That's a good thing. I might use that in the future. It's a
all
good
right.
thing.
And guys out there, we've come to the end of our show today. But don't you worry. We'll be back to do it again next week with a new guest, with new insights and new lessons. So make sure you don't miss it. But I'd like to thank my guest, Steve Sonderman, for joining us today and for being so gracious with his time. Thanks, Steve, man, for being on the podcast. Appreciate
you
it.
You bet.
Man.
Great to be here.
And Steve, quickly for us, for our listeners, if they wanted to find out more about you, we've been talking about the conference, but if they wanted to find out more about you and your ministry and what you're working on, how's the best way for them to reach out to you or to connect with you?
I think I'll just say the one website to go to is menwithnoregrets.org. And menwithnoregrets.org, it has our training materials, it has all the books that I've written, it has our podcast, has all the information on the conference, it's all right there. So just menwithnoregrets.org would be one place if they're looking for more information.
All right, and that should be easy for them to remember, and also we're going to put that in the show notes as well so they have access to that. And guys, hey, that's the end of our show, but please do us a favor. This is so important. Take about 30 seconds to go over to iTunes and rate this program for us. Let us know what you thought about Steve in his show today, in his episode, and if it has blessed you in any way. And because this is the best way to help us get this program in the hands, ears, and hearts of men just like you. And please don't keep us a secret. Share us with your friends. So until next time, I'm Joe Martin, your man builder with RealMenConnect.com, reminding you that we are males by birth, but we are men by choice. So each and every day, choose to be that man that God called and created you to be, because a male is a terrible, terrible thing to waste. So until next time, stay strong, stay blessed, and as always, stay in God's grip.
Thank you for listening to the Real Men Connect podcast with Dr. Joe Martin. Real Men Connect isn't just a podcast. It's a mission, ministry, and movement to help good men become the great men God called and created us to be. and the best is yet to come. So if you enjoyed this episode, go ahead and leave us a review in iTunes. It really helps us to build the podcast and to reach, teach, and impact more men, all for the glory of God. And make sure you check out realmenconnect.com to get our free tools and resources to help you go from good man to great man God's way. Again, that's realmenconnect.com. Thank you for listening. We'll see you in the next episode.